Throughout the summer, we are inviting the major candidates officially running for governor to make their case to you. Last month, we spoke to Republican candidate and former state representative Jeff Diehl, Democratic candidate and state senator Sonia Chang Diaz, and Democratic candidate and former state senator Ben Downing. You can find those conversations on our website, radioboston.org. Well, today we welcome Harvard professor Danielle Allen. She is also running to be the Democratic candidate for governor. Danielle Allen, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much, Tiziana. It's great to be here.
So I want to start with a question that I have asked every candidate who's joined us. Here in 2021, what makes you better than anyone else to be governor now and to run this Commonwealth?
I combine a vision for what we could be if we work on behalf of all of us together, which is one Commonwealth. I combine vision with management capacity, 20 years of experience leading organizations at all scales, from small startups to a $6 billion philanthropy, and clarity about what we need for an economy that supports growth and development in the whole of our Commonwealth and connects everybody to opportunity and security.
If elected and your vision were in action, what would be different, really fundamentally different in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts?
Well, first of all, we would all be able to see what's happening in the whole Commonwealth. So for folks who live in the Boston area, often people don't know that 20% of the people in Lowell and Lawrence and north of that in Amherst are living in poverty, for example. People often don't know that Springfield is the asthma capital of the country. People don't know that folks have been living in the woods in Western Mass and on Martha's Vineyard. So for starters, we would see our whole Commonwealth, and we would understand that in order to connect opportunity, everybody to opportunity and security, what we really need to do is invest in basic building blocks of infrastructure, social infrastructure, housing, transportation, schools, good jobs, and justice. So for starters, just it's really critical. We need an abundant supply of affordable, accessible housing all over the Commonwealth. And we also really need to have a modernized transportation infrastructure. Those two parts of infrastructure are really strangling our economy, especially outside of Route 128. We have to do work of transformation to ensure that the entire Commonwealth is connected to a growing, prosperous economy. I did a lot of work on COVID last year. I spent just tons of time digging in all levels, city, state, federal, really working to build out infrastructure for testing, working on contact tracing and the like. But what that experience drove home to me was just how different resources are in different parts of our Commonwealth, in between urban areas, rural areas, gateway cities, and the like. And so fundamentally, a lot of our challenges with COVID, a lot of the ways in which it has hit inequitably, just reflect the underlying inequities in our economy.
And for so us, what- even to have So is there something specific you would have done differently than the current administration has done on COVID?
Yes, I would have moved a heck of a lot faster to build out testing infrastructure, for sure. I would have worked a lot harder and faster for federal partnerships for investment in that last March and April. I would have rolled out mobile testing a lot faster. And in general, I would have had free testing everywhere across the whole Commonwealth. We never achieved that comprehensive free testing everywhere across the whole Commonwealth that could have shut the disease down right in the very beginning.
And what would be the first thing you'd do on COVID if you were elected when you got into office? I understand that is a year from now, but I think it's still a relevant question.
I think there are things we should be doing today, which is that our state government should be mandating for state employees that they either be vaccinated or have weekly COVID tests. And I really want to lift up our treasurer and our auditor, who have shown leadership in both of their agencies on that front. It's just critical that our state agencies be workplaces where all employees have safe and healthy work conditions and where all residents of the Commonwealth who need public services also are able to access them in healthy and safe ways.
Okay. So when you talked a little bit about your vision there, you talked about inequality, inequity, you talked about housing, social infrastructure. All three major Democratic candidates are safe, self-labeled progressives and talk about similar issues. Is there anything specific that you think sets you apart in terms of platform or policy from the group of progressives now in the race?
So I do share core progressive values with some of my fellow candidates, for sure. And I also bring a pragmatism to it. And partly that comes from long family tradition. I grew up in a family that has been deeply committed to the vote and empowerment over time. My great grandparents on my mom's side helped fight for women's right to vote in the early 20th century in Michigan. And my great grandmother was president of the League of Women Voters in Michigan. My granddad on my dad's side helped found one of the first NAACP chapters in Northern Florida in the 40s, which is a very dangerous time. So I'm from a family that has a sort of long history, long tradition of fighting for democracy, fighting for empowerment, and being really pragmatic about how to get that done, you know, showing those results in the form of achieving the vote, achieving, you know, change with others in the context of organizing for the civil rights movement and the like. So I believe in organizing. I believe in building coalitions. I believe in bringing people together and getting things done.
You know, I'm going to back up for a minute. I realize there's a question I want to ask you in follow-up to what you said about supporting state governments, you know, agencies mandating vaccinations. Should we be seeing large-scale vaccine mandates? Should private employers be doing it? Do you think there should be federal action on that? How far should we go in mandating that people get vaccinated?
I do think that there are basic occupational safety and health issues here, basic OSHA issues. Every workplace should have a basic level of health and safety, and that does require, you know, vaccines or weekly testing. So yes, I think every employer over a certain scale should in fact be doing that.
All right. Thanks for letting me go back and pick up that thread. I didn't want to leave it unchecked. So at the beginning, you also talked about your management capacity and your management potential. I want to push on that because I know you're aware you're the candidate who has not had experience working in government. You've been unapologetic about that. You've talked about your experience in the academic world as a strength. How so? How does that give you a strength in running government when you don't have experience in running government before?
Well, I've had lots of opportunities for managerial and leadership experiences in the nonprofit sector, and government is a nonprofit sector. I think sometimes we forget that. So I think that there's lots that translate. So I was fortunate to have an early leadership opportunity at the age of 32, was dean of the Division of Humanities at the University of Chicago. It's a small job compared to state government, but it was 250 full-time employees and $60 million annual budget, and have been leading teams and leading organizations to success ever since. So in that regard, you know, I think what we are working on is about building teams to meet a transformational moment. And I have both a lot of experience building and leading teams to, again, organizational success and real clarity about the transformational moment that we're in.
So institutions like University of Chicago, Harvard University, now where you run Harvard Center for Ethics, they're large institutions with a lot of resources behind them. And the things that you've run are within those larger institutions. In the corner office for the state, there's nothing behind that but you, right? You and the state budget, the legislature, that can be really being out on a limb. What prepares you to be out on that kind of limb without a safety net in times as tight as these are?
So first of all, just a clarification, I am on leave from Harvard. And so there's now somebody else, my colleague Yin Hashad, directing that ethics center. So I want to make sure that that's clarified. And I have absolutely also led outside the context of universities. So I chaired the Mellon Foundation board, and that's a $6 billion foundation, you know, with fiduciary responsibility for those assets and fiduciary responsibility for that $300 million annual budget. So I could go through other things that are outside of colleges and universities that I've also had the chance to lead. Work I've done as regional field organizer in the 07-08 Obama campaign. So in that regard, I have had lots of experience working in context without, you know, what you're calling a safety net. But I also honestly think that's not the right way of thinking about how the things that grow in universities and then translate into the real world function. So if you look at the biomedical sciences, what you see is over and over again, folks building things that start in labs, start in formative labs. Labs are themselves team management structures, and then they migrate out into the world, into one another form of entity. And in various ways, I've also had the opportunity to spin work out, often handing it off to other organizations and then helping them take it forward in the world, working closely with nonprofits and the like. So I do have a pretty broad view and perspective of how organizations rise and fall when they have no safety nets.
Okay, I want to stay on this for one more question. And I am not looking to play gotcha here, but I have to ask you, through the course of our research today, two producers and I each tried to Google your campaign website, and we each tried several different searches and couldn't get a link to your campaign site to pop up on the first page of results. So out of curiosity, we tried searching the names of two of your Democratic opponents, and their campaign sites were both the first result. That looks like an experience gap in the nuts and bolts of campaigning in the team versus maybe other seasoned campaigners. What is your reaction to that, and how do you close that gap, over the next several months?
I'm proud of my team, and I have people with just really extraordinary experience on my team without any question. And, I think if you take a look at who's on my team, you'll see that they have, combined decades worth of experience running campaigns. So I'm not concerned about that at all. I had a pre-existing extensive public profile. That makes it harder, actually, to deal with the search optimization in ways that get your website up there on the first click. So we have a very specific kind of problem because of my pre-existing public profile. So we are certainly working that through. And I believe you meet a team is on it and they recognize the issue and it'll get done. And then, we're working on building a grassroots organization. That's the key thing. And so we have a lot of folks out there who are engaging. We've been running listening sessions over the Commonwealth over the course of the last few months with thousands of people participating. And so we're just really grateful that there are many different modes of connecting and engaging with people.
So let's talk about this larger competitive landscape. Massachusetts, I've asked this to the other candidates on the Democratic side as well. We're a state that traditionally likes to elect Republican governors. The offices have been held by Republicans for all but eight of the last 30 years. And exit polling from 2018 showed that an estimated 47% of Democrats actually voted for Governor Charlie Baker. We don't know if he will run again or not, but we do know about that predilection among the electorate. So how do you create widespread appeal to the broad electorate if you make it through the primary and are the main ticket candidate?
We're just in a really critical moment in our Commonwealth and in our country more generally. And again, you look at the pandemic and you see that stark disparity of impact and you realize it really reflects an underlying problem with our economy, where we have not been building in and investing a one Commonwealth economy, an economy that really does bring growth and prosperity to everybody, including those outside of Route 128. So the simple fact of the matter is that my focus on investment in infrastructure, the basic building blocks of infrastructure, is a whole Commonwealth approach to our economy. And I think that really responds to centrist concerns. As we've been running this listening session, these conversations all over the Commonwealth, we just hear from everybody, all different kinds of political perspective and backgrounds, that housing and transportation are the number one concerns. Now, when you address those, when you invest in that kind of infrastructure, it does support a broad footprint for growth across the whole Commonwealth. And that does respond to that, again, sort of centrist concern about making sure we always have a prosperous economy. At the same time, to do that work is how you reconnect people to opportunity and security. So that gives you a chance to address real questions of justice and equity at the same time. So we are in a moment, we're just in a moment in the Commonwealth where what we need actually combines progressive values and centrist concerns. So that's the case I'm working on making.
So last question to you, Danielle Allen. We have been in a moment where women of color are making huge breakthroughs in elected office. If you were to be elected, you would be the first Black woman ever elected governor in U.S. history. What would that mean to you?
Well, it would mean there was a heck of a lot of work to do. it would just mean that it was just an extraordinary opportunity to work with the people of Massachusetts to build that positive, proactive 21st century democracy that includes everybody, that delivers an economy that's good for everybody, and that really defeats the creeping authoritarianism we see around the country by generating a compelling alternative.
All right. That is Harvard professor and Democratic gubernatorial candidate Danielle Allen. Thank you for joining us today on Radio Boston.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.